The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we guide you through the fastest 2 hours in radio on this Friday night. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We're going to be bringing you a ton of college football talk. And right off the top this evening, we are so delighted to welcome in our very own college football contributor who joins us each and every week, and that is Husker great Jason Peter. And JP, all I can say is my. We certainly have a lot of ground to cover. And Nebraska fires Bo Pelini last Sunday, ending the seven-year run for as the Cornhuskers head coach, but they already made a hiring on Thursday, new head coach Mike Riley. What was your reaction to the decision?
The reaction was like a lot of Nebraska fans, and that's we didn't know how to react because Mike Riley was nowhere even on the radar. You know, it's not like he is a featured piece on ESPN or Oregon State is, you know, on game day shows, you know, Saturday afternoon. You know, it's taken a few days, I think, for it to sink in for a lot of people. You know, they were kind of thinking, well, if they went out to Oregon, they were going to hire Scott Frost, the former quarterback, as the head coach, and that's really who I was pulling for. You know, I just thought it was the right time. You know, I mean, for a lot of people, they didn't think he had enough in the resume. But this day and age, I just think it's a different game. You know, guys, as far as and not football in general, just with coaching, these guys, they climb the ladder fast. And a lot of the philosophy, the X's and O's that people are running today are somewhat new. So, you know, you don't need 30 years coaching experience necessarily to be an expert at it. And a lot of this stuff is coming from younger people. But, you know, Frost, I mean, he's the offensive coordinator at Oregon. You know, he was a two-year starter at quarterback here at the University of Nebraska. You know, he played defense. I mean, that's how highly, you know, coaches thought of him, is that they took this quarter option quarterback, and he ended up playing safety in the NFL for 6-7 years, playing, you know, for guys like Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells you know, learning under Gruden and you name it. I mean, Bill Walsh, he learned from a lot of great players, but from great coaches. But Sean Eichhorst shocked everybody and just went in a completely different direction.
Were you surprised how quickly, Jason, that he made the decision? I mean, I know there's a lot on the table right now in terms of with recruiting, but
It really didn't come as a shock, and the reason why is because he made it clear that he was not hiring Nebraska was not going to hire a search firm to assist in the process, and he was completely silent on it. Nobody had anything. I mean, everybody, you know, it was the typical stuff. You know, Jim Tressel was at Starbucks, you know, in Lincoln grabbing a coffee.
Oh, and, yeah.
And Dan Mullen, you know, there was a plane that just came in from, you know, the state of Mississippi, so it's got to be Dan Mullen.
Do you think he consulted Tom Osborne at all, though?
I don't know. This is the thing. I think this job search has basically been going on for a year, okay? Because I'm sure when your former head coach dares you to fire him in a post-game press conference after losing, you know, to Iowa
right.
a year ago, I think Sean Eichhorst, whether he's truthful about it or not, I think he starts to put a list together. He starts, you know, figuring out and talking to people about, you know, who he might be interested in. And I think this thing is pretty much a done deal in his mind. The second that Bo is fired, he knows exactly where he's going. And I just think for, you know, the in the days leading up to it, they were just working out the details of it. I mean, I think he knew, and there was never even an option, another option for him in his eyes as to who was going to be the head coach.
Okay, Jason, real quick, I mean, what has been the response and the reaction, not only from your former teammates and the guys that have been part of the program, but from the fans? I mean, what kind of things are you hearing?
It's mixed. You know, right now, I think people initially will start to, you know, Nebraska fans just want Nebraska to be Nebraska again. And whether that's realistic or not, you know, it depends on who you're talking to.
Is it realistic? Is it realistic, Jason?
Is it? Well, yeah. Is it realistic to win, you know, maybe like Alabama is winning, kind of like how we won in the 90s? Probably not. You know, you're just not going to get that influx of talent. But it's not unrealistic, I think, to say that you're going to compete, truly compete for a conference championship every year. You know, you should be in the mix every year. You know, you should be playing for one at coming out of this West Division. You know, what do you have? You're basically playing Wisconsin every year for the right to play, you know, represent the West. And you know, it's disheartening for Nebraska fans because Wisconsin was a program that modeled itself after Nebraska. They said, we want to be like you.
Right.
I mean, Barry Alvarez, everybody knows the story. You know, he was a linebacker here at Nebraska, eventually is coaching Wisconsin, the athletic director. He's been open and honest about it. I wanted this place to be like Nebraska.
And I think they replicated even the walk-on program, too. Am I right?
Yeah, they tried to. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And now kind of, you know, in a lot of ways, the student is a lot smarter, you know, than the teacher. We've fallen off. And, you know, 9-4, there were a lot of people that were happy with it. And there are a lot of people that were happy with it when they hired Mike Riley. In their eyes, they're saying, my goodness, you just fired a coach that averaged 9 wins a year for a coach out at Oregon State that's averaging, you know, 6.5 wins a year. And people, you know, sometimes they don't, and I initially, you know, I mean, when Sean Eichhorst had his press conference announcing that you know, Bo had been let go and relieved of his duties, he said pretty much money is not going to be an issue. And this Nebraska program is as good and has as many resources as any other football program in this country. So basically he's saying that, you know, we will spend whatever we need to spend to get our guy. And nobody knew that our guy was, you know, Mike Riley out in Corvallis, who really was probably going to get fired, you know, at the end of this year, if this thing probably wasn't in the works. I mean, you know, you just went 5-7. That's not, you know, something to write home about. And I understand that it's Corvallis, and, you know, you're not in probably the top half necessarily of the Pac-12. But, you know, you're not also at the extreme bottom. But I think people, when Sean Eichhorst had talked about that, he thought, or people thought, you know, geez, this sounds like, you know,
right.
we're basically going to be knocking on Nick Saban's door.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen.
Hey, Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We've got to step aside for our very first commercial break. We will be rejoined. We're going to talk about the latest college football rankings. And also, we want to talk about some of the deciding factors that ultimately decided Bo Pelini's fate. We want to talk about that with Jason Peter, one of the all-time greatest at the University of Nebraska. We will be right back at Yahoo Sports Radio. Yes, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And as we continue on with our college football conversation with Husker great Jason Peter, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And you can also check us out at Twitter at eradiosports. Jason, okay, so you have weighed in on the new hiring, the new head coach at the University of Nebraska, and that is Mike Riley. What were your thoughts on the firing of Bo Pelini last Sunday? I mean, it ends that seven-year run as the Cornhuskers head coach. I mean, in your mind, what were the deciding factors that determined his fate?
Well, I think ultimately it was the personality, the attitude. And I don't know if I necessarily knew that when it first happened, but now that you see Nebraska go with Mike Riley, who is the complete opposite of Bo Pelini. I mean, from the people that I've talked to, they say he's the closest thing you'll get to Tom Osborne without, you know, actually having Tom Osborne. He's just a genuine guy, and he's good with the media. All reports say you know who a lot of people have compared him to, and I don't know how big your basketball fans are out there, but Tim Miles, who has taken over the Nebraska basketball program.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And is very, very savvy with the things that he does in recruiting, with social media. He tweets, you know, at halftime and stuff like that. They say that Mike Riley is pretty innovative when it comes to social media. Now, I don't know if that's all him or, you know, he just has hired good people around him. But, yeah, that's kind of what they're saying about him. So this day and age, you know, you're not lying in a hotbed of recruits out here, obviously. So you got to be able to get on planes and use social media as well and do stuff to attract kids here. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, Bo, I think he probably thought he had a better chance of being fired last year than he did maybe this year. Obviously, they ended with a win, but ultimately it just came down to he didn't win enough big games either. I mean, that's kind of the thing that irritated people here in Nebraska was every time we played at night under the lights, national TV, regional TV, whatever it may be, we did not show up.
Well, you guys were 8-17 against AP ranked teams and no BCS bowl appearances. I mean, so that really says it all. You know, and just the mind shift in terms of, I mean, it just wasn't enough. Winning 9 games per season, it wasn't enough. You just have to wonder where the bar is going to be set now for Mike Riley. What are going to be the expectations that will be placed upon him?
And he's going to have to come in and he's going to have to work fast, I think. He's not going to get 7 years like Bo Pelini did. I think it's you know, when you fire a coach for 9-4, whatever, you're saying that's not enough. We need to win big games and we need to compete and win conference championships and be in the hunt for national championships. And I think that's what's going to be expected out of Mike Riley. You're basically saying, here you are, you know, every once in a while out in Corvallis, you put together a 9-win season. I think he had one 10-win season, which matches, you know, Pelini's best record. Now we're giving you all of this to go along with kind of what you've done out there. So now we expect more. We expect, you know, with all the resources that we're going to give you and the use of planes and the use of basically whatever you need that anyone could imagine that you need in order to be successful in Division I college football, we will give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be no excuses. And, you know, I think he's going to have to have some results quick.
Right.
You know, maybe a year where people will kind of look the other way, but after that, he's going to have to do it with Bo's kids. I mean, there's talent here, though. I mean, that's the thing. When Bo took over, that was the big kind of the thing was, well, the cupboard's kind of dry. Now, I mean, prior to the season starting, all those national guys that come around and visit your training camp, they all said, you know, maybe other than Ohio State, Nebraska's the most talented team in the Big Ten. So we'll see.
Okay, Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I think back to Tom Landry. Obviously, you played for him. I mean, a brilliant strategist, 13 conference championships in the 1990s, of course, winning 3 national titles. You were obviously a part of that. What do you believe is the biggest component right now that the Cornhusker program is lacking?
I think the kids really don't know how to win big. I don't think, and I don't know if that was, you know, something from their coach. I think there was bad in-game management. I don't know if Bo communicated well on game day with players and coaches. So that's something I think is a factor, you know, when you see that they hired Mike Riley. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you talk to and you hear things like that some of the players have said and, you know, where they think, you know, people should be patting them on the back for winning 9 games. And that is like, if I think back, I put myself in that situation back in college. If we would have won 9 games, my goodness, I mean, not only would we basically, you know, have been our heads cut off and going in circles because we were just like, what in the world happened? How did this happen? We won 9 games. We're embarrassed. You know, here, take our jersey, take our scholarship. We don't deserve. But they're actually thinking, why are people upset with us?
Next week, we've definitely got to get into the college football playoff, just these continual changes that take place. And how about those TCU Horned Frogs jumping to number 3? We're out of time, but we will definitely get into it next week. Thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you, E, for having me on.
You bet. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. And of course, tonight, we have already hit on a number of schools and conferences. It is time now to head out to the ACC as big news this past week as Clemson's offensive coordinator, Chad Morris, has been named SMU's new head coach. And with us tonight on the Stuart Cadillac guest line is Lou Sahadi. He is a sports writer, a prolific sports writer and author. And, of course, he's joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. Real people, real value, real simple. Lou, it's your first time on the show. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday night.
Hey, it's nice to have you on this evening.
Okay, well, we've got a lot of ground to cover, and I'm very anxious to get your reaction on Chad Morris's hiring. I'm the man behind the hurry-up, the no-huddle, high-tempo offense. I guess it wasn't that big of a surprise that Chad made quite an impression over the past 4 years at Clemson running that Tigers offense.
Not at all. You hit the nail on the head. All those good things you said about him are true. His up-tempo offense absolutely brought Clemson out of the, I don't want to say the dark ages, but brought him up another tier, there's no question about it. And look, you can tell the value of this man by he is probably one of the highest paid offensive coordinators in the country. He got over 7-figure money just to stay at Clemson. So for him to leave there and go to SMU, boys, you better open up the coffers.
Well, the hiring, it certainly, Lou, you would say it made sense because he's a Dallas native. He attended, SMU games as a kid growing up. I mean, he would head over and watch so many of those games. And he spent, 16 years as a high school coach in Texas.
Well, that'll help with recruiting, number one. And number two, it's a dream job for him. It's anybody, any coach that coaches out there always wants to come back to their hometown and make be a hero. He'll do it.
Yes, Lou Sahadi is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Well-known sports writer and author. Of course, we have extended an invitation to him tonight because his latest book that he has produced, it is titled 100 Things Clemson Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is truly the ultimate resource for true Clemson fans. We're going to get into that momentarily, but let's pause for a moment. Let's take a deep breath, Lou. Give us an overview and just kind of summarize how the season has played out so far, and what do you believe are the best bowl chances for the Tigers this year?
Okay. I thought they had an excellent year, 9-3. What's probably held them back from at least a 10 or 11 game winning season is the fact that they have a rookie quarterback, Deshaun Watson, who is going to be big. Clemson, this Clemson team now, they'll end up in a decent bowl. Saturday night is a big game when Florida State and Georgia Tech meet. Georgia Tech beat Clemson when this kid went down, okay? If Florida State beats Georgia Tech and beats them pretty bad, I think Clemson could jump possibly into the Orange Bowl. I would say right now they're sitting at a bowl in Orlando, and nothing will be known until Sunday. Mm-hmm. But this is, I'll tell you, this is going to be a tough team next year because their three offensive stars are all freshmen.
Wow. Yeah, it's a young team. They've got a lot of players that are up and coming. You know, talking about the bowl game, I mean, is there a particular matchup that you would perhaps desire that you'd like to see and might be a good fit?
Yes, I like it. I'll be honest with you, I hope it's in Miami because I live in Boca Raton.
Right.
So that's the hop, skipping the jump, to jump into the press box. But to show you the value of Chad Morris, you did see what Dabo Swinney, the head coach of Clemson, did. He didn't bring in an offensive coordinator from outside the university. What he did was have two of his coordinators become the coordinators for offense. He's going to have two offensive coordinators instead of one. But that's the system they love that Chad has developed. And these two coaches, who I have not met, but I'll be honest with you, even though I'm down here touring on a book tour, they apparently will follow up on Chad's philosophy.
Hey, we are so glad you made it a point to join us on this Friday night right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, having a wonderful conversation with Lou Sahadi right here. Of course, he is a prolific author and sports writer, has released a new book, 100 Things Clemson Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We're going to talk about that here in just a second. But you were talking about head coach Dabo Swinney. He really has done an amazing job. I mean, I think Clemson is in very good hands, continues to, I would say, re-energize the program, especially, I mean, you look back, what, a week ago, that 35-17 win over South Carolina.
Yeah, I was there, and I really enjoyed it. They really dominated the Gamecocks, and it just shows you, when you have a quarterback, it's so important. Watson had sat out those two games that they lost, and when he got back on the field, he changed the whole dynamics of the offense. He didn't know if he was going to run, he didn't know if he was going to throw. So, you know, he had the Gamecocks back on their heels on defense, he really did. And you could portend what the future is going to be with these two running backs and Watson. They're going to be tough next year. They'll go for 10, 11 wins next year easily.
So how does a win like that, Lou, how is that going to impact the recruiting for Clemson?
Oh, it's going to impact it tremendously. There's no question about it. I mean, if I was an offensive player, let's start with the offense. If I was an offensive player, I'd definitely look at Clemson because of the up-tempo deep offense. Defense, they had the number one or number two defensive team in the whole country. So that program is well-rounded. It's well-fortified. It's got a great future. I mean, it's a winning program. If I was a kid in high school, I'd definitely give Clemson a shot.
Well, one of the guys I definitely want to ask you about is defensive coordinator Brent Venables. Obviously, you know I'm an Oklahoma girl, proud Sooner, very familiar with his time at OU. And this is it's hard to believe. I mean, it was his third season with the Tigers. Just give us your assessment of the job that he's done, because how has he been able to turn around Clemson's defense from a liability into a strength?
Well, the first job is recruiting. There's no question about it. You have to recruit, whoever you are, you have to recruit players for your system, okay? A 6'9", 270-pound guy may not be for him. Maybe a 6'5", 250-pound guy will be for him if he wants speed. But he developed a great. I mean, I look for him to leave in another year or two, I'll be honest with you. I mean, to finish number one and number two on defense in the entire country, that is pretty strong.
Hey, Lou Sahadi, with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. I promise, just one more timely, relevant question in regards to the Clemson Tigers. And I'm going off the top of my head. Was the last time they won a national title, was it in 81?
It was in 1981. And I'll tell you a funny story about that. My literary agent called me and said, I got a good book contract for you. I said, what's that now? Oh, a book on Clemson football. I said, are you serious? I honestly said that. She said, what do you mean? I said, who's going to buy that book? You know, she said, hey, don't think nationally, just think regionally. They got a great fan base. And when I went down there to do my research, I was blown away by the people down there, honestly. They were great. One of the head coaches there, the former legend, Frank Howard, used to call me the Yankee from New York. But they, they opened their hearts for me. They opened anything I wanted. They were great cooperative. And I really experienced some of those games down there. There was a tremendous fan base. I'd like to know of any stronger fan base in the entire country than the Clemson fan base.
Well, the Tigers certainly have a reputation as a consistent program, but I have to wonder what it will take for them to be a national contender. Boy, time is quickly flying by. Tell us about the new book, 100 Things Clemson Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. You were just highlighting how passionate the fans are, how engaged they are with the program. Just kind of give us the layout of the book.
It was a fun book to write. It's really 100 vignettes, so I had to do a lot of research. I had to research almost the entire athletic department and have some help from some of the people down there who are very gracious. I mean, I couldn't name the 100 great things in Clemson history, but they could. And once you got the list of 100, then you had to research them and, you know, write maybe little vignettes, 500 to 1,000 words on each. So I enjoyed writing it, and I really did. And once I get in a writing mood, I can write all day, I'll be honest with you. So I enjoyed it. I met some people there that I haven't seen since 1983, and they remembered me. Louis, good to see you, you know. So I felt it was sort of a second homecoming for me, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed writing it.
Well, you do a great job, and an inside look at an extraordinary team, especially in 1981, as we were just highlighting, talking about that national championship led by head coach Danny Ford. What did you share in the book about that?
Danny Ford was a great guy. It's amazing. Clemson has so many Alabama roots. Frank Howard came out of Alabama. Then Danny Ford came out of Alabama. And Dabo Sweeney came out of Alabama.
Ah, yeah.
So it's sort of a pipeline, right? It's pretty strange.
Sure.
All these three head coaches who are legends down there at this point in time, they all came from Alabama. Danny Ford was a great guy. He's a big old country boy, drives a pickup truck. Pair of jeans and a baseball cap, man, and he's low key. And I did a signing with him the first week I was down there. I'm telling you, you thought he was Santa Claus. The mothers will come up with their kids, Mr. Ford, would you take a picture of my kid? I said, yeah, buy a book. He said, oh, that's okay, Lou, that's okay. And he accommodated everybody. So he's a very, very popular man, probably the most popular coach in the history of that school.
It is a fascinating ring, the ultimate resource for true Clemson fans, 100 Things Clemson Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We've been going one-on-one with Lou Sahadi, prolific sports writer and author, and I can't wait to have you back on the show because we're going to talk about one of my favorites, and that is Frank Sinatra. You had an opportunity to do a one-on-one interview with him, and I can't wait to hear about that. Okay, Lou?
You got it.
Okay, much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Yes, indeed. We are back tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And I tell you, we absolutely love hearing from you, especially on this Friday night. So join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. And you can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. It is the month of December, but we're going to get after it and go around the horn and talk some MLB. And our favorite guest in our go-to guy always, the rising star right here at YSR, and that's our producer, Andy Pondillo. Good evening, Andy. It's nice to have you with us.
I'm happy to be back. Baseball is still a long way away, but there's been plenty of moves all around the board this offseason.
Well, I'm anxious to get your thoughts on some of the movement that has taken place, but I got to ask you, let's have some fun, Andy. I mean, Christmas is just a few weeks away. If you've been naughty, you've been nice. I mean, what's Santa going to bring you? Probably a new glove in baseball?
You know, that would be nice, but I like my bats, my glove. I won't change my glove. I still use the same one I used probably in eighth grade.
Really?
It's just one of those things that you're comfortable with it.
Yeah.
The inside's tearing out, but there's no reason to change something that works. So when I talk to Santa, I go more of the electronic route. You know, let's get me a PlayStation 4 and get updated so I can waste some hours away.
You're high maintenance. You sound like our two boys. I mean, they're like, I want an iPhone 6, I want a new iPod. I'm like, oh my soul. Okay, so we've digressed just a bit, Andy. Let's get back on track here. Talk to me about the Astros offseason, because really, I mean, from what I've been tracking and seeing, it's been quiet so far, but are they making some moves behind the scenes?
It's been quiet so far, but there's plenty of time to get it rolling. Let's remember the winter meetings have not happened, but you feel like they really haven't done a lot because we've seen so many teams make splashes early this offseason that you're going to know, what are the Astros doing? But I think they're on a good track. They're looking for a closer. That's what they need to fix. Their bullpen, about the worst in the league last year, along with the Colorado Rockies. And it's no coincidence that the teams that have the worst bullpens are often the worst teams in baseball. So the Astros last year, 70 wins. You think if they have a league average bullpen, they may have won up to 77, 78 games, a completely different outlook you would have had on the 2014 season. They know that, and they're going to try and fix that problem. I think it does start with the closer position. The problem with that is signing a free agent closer. They've looked at David Robertson. Andrew Miller doesn't look like he's coming to Houston. They've looked at him. You're going to spend some dollars on these guys. You're going to have to give up 4 years of $40 million, $50 million. It's going to be a tough, strict price to pay on a relief pitcher when relief pitching, some years they're good, some years they're horrible. You never really know. It's the toughest position to predict. It's a roller coaster ride with those guys.
Okay, our very own Andy Pondillo is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and you really emphasized right at the top of the list, the Christmas list for the Astros is they're getting a closer, getting a relief pitcher. Andy, I know you cover very closely the Astros. I mean, who is that ideal candidate that they need to bring on board?
I think that David Robertson would be nice for the Astros. It would be a risk to go and get a closer of his stature. He's asking for Jonathan Papelbon money, so you're giving $13 million a year to a closer, and it could completely not work. We've seen, you know, Jim Johnson had two straight years of over 50 saves. He goes to the Oakland Athletics, absolutely bombs last year. He's the guy that you would have never expected. He seemed like that sure guy that you know is going to get the job done. David Robertson does seem like that guy from the Yankees that could be a dominant closer with the Astros, given that big contract, given an opportunity with a young team, and you expect them to win anywhere from 75 to 81 games next year. So he'll get some good closing opportunities with them. You know, I would even say maybe they could be just as good as the Yankees next year based on the downfall of that team. So those are the two he's deciding from. It's a risk. The Astros, if they're going to get over this hump, if they're going to be a competitor, at some point they do have to take risks in the free agent market. Some teams go overboard. Some teams give guys 13-year contracts, but the Astros don't have to do that. At the same time, if you're playing to win this game, you have to take a risk. And in that bullpen, that's probably the one area the Astros don't have a lot of depth, even in the minor league system. So they need to fix the closer position. They're talking about trading one of their catchers. So you fix the closer position, you trade a catcher. Hopefully that catcher gets you two relievers in return. Right there, three relief pitchers. That can change the bullpen. You move Chad Qualls out of closer, back to setup man where he belongs. You can fix the bullpen quickly if you make some savvy moves at the GM position.
Well, I want to talk some more about some of those minor moves that the Astros might be making. But, you know, Andy, we've not had you on in a while. How did you see, would you just summarize for us just how the season did play out for the Astros? I mean, what kind of grade would you give them?
It's tough to really give them a good grade because I want to win games. They made a significant improvement from 51 wins to 70 wins. Teams usually in baseball, it's not one of those, it's not like football where you can go 2-14 one year and then the next year you're in the postseason. Baseball, it's more of a gradual process, whether you're falling apart or rather you're coming up. And right now the Astros coming up 19 games, a significant improvement. So I'd have to give them at least a C just because of that, for how much they improved from last year. A top-heavy team, but at the same time, the bullpen effort was atrocious, and it's impossible to win in this era of baseball with specialized pitching, with pitchers that don't go deep into games like they used to. If you're not running out there a good bullpen, guys that can neutralize a good left-handed bat, guys in the eighth inning that can shut it down, it's just, it is so hard to win with as poor as the relief pitchers were last year for the Astros. So if they fix that, it gives them a chance. The other problems they got to solve is the bottom of the lineup was pretty awful. Top-heavy lineup the Astros have. I would say their first five could be very good next year. Looking at George Springer, Jose Altuve, Dexter Fowler. Mm-hmm. He might get traded. We're not sure. But regardless, you look at the top of their order, Chris Carter, you slot him in the middle. They got some power there. They got some guys that can get on base. They have athletes. The most important thing, guys can get hit the ball, move the runners, drive in runners. They have a top-heavy team. It's all about filling the depth of the team now. They're going to do that through their excellent minor league system, and then hopefully they're going to do that with some offseason moves.
Andy Pondillo, always always bringing power at the plate, some great opinions and perspective right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Andy, you've got some things going on. I mean, give us an update on the latest on your podcast and where we can direct all the listeners nationally.
Yeah, so we're talking a lot of Astros baseball. A new podcast just actually came out this week, Astro Chat. That's on climbingtowelshill.com. It's also a blog site where you can read about a lot of news, rumors, updates, a lot of stuff going on with the Astros. Definitely always an interesting team to follow. They may not reward you with a lot of wins, but they do things differently. Jeff Luhnow, you never know what he's going to do, what he has up his pocket, so you can always check that out at climbingtowelshill.com.
Okay, so Luhnow, he came on board in 2011. What's your assessment of the job that he's done?
The jury's still out on Luhnow. When he first took over, it was like he could almost do nothing wrong because he fixed this organization, this minor league system that was ranked 29th, 30th. Ed Wade started the process before he left, but that didn't really move the needle much. He was able to trade Hunter Pence, get John Singleton. George Springer was already in the system, so some tools were had by Luhnow. He had to get depth on the team, and we don't really see depth at the major league level, and that's hurting them greatly, especially when we talk about the bullpen. We talk about the back of the lineup. So he's trying to fix that. We don't know. We don't know what his prospects are going to do. Mark Appel, Colin Moran, who he just traded for, Rio Ruiz, Carlos Correa. It all looks great on paper, but if these guys don't do good in the major leagues, it's going to fall all on Luhnow, and it could lead to his firing. So he could either be a genius, he could be Sabian for the Giants and lead this team to multiple World Series titles with this innovative style he's done, or it could completely fail, and that is the risk you take with young players in baseball, because no matter how good they look on paper, no matter how good their minor league numbers are, we get excited about it. I think it's going to work personally. I want to keep Luhnow here and see if his plan works, but it only takes a few big-name prospects not working out, and you're looking for a job next month.
Okay, providing some MLB news and notes tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, with our producer, Andy Pondillo. And, of course, Andy is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. You know, we've talked so much about, in terms of Andy, some of the movement potentially, or that has taken place within the Astros organization. But what about in the front office? What about A.J. Hinch?
A.J. Hinch is going to be an interesting guy. He doesn't seem like he's quite the analytical guy, but he doesn't seem like he's quite the old school, let's just forget about sabermetrics guy. So he's right in the middle. I think the biggest thing for A.J. is that he's going to listen to instruction from Jeff Luhnow. Luhnow wants a guy who believes in the system, who believes in the rebuild. And really, A.J. really lucked into his job and the fact that he came once the corner has started to turn a little bit. The Astros have gotten over that hump, whereas Bo Porter came right when the Astros bottomed out. A lot of times in the major leagues, you'll see managers come in, try and fix a team, if you will, and then they get fired as soon as the team comes over to hump because the whole time the general manager had another idea and plan. Too much butting heads with Bo and Jeff. I think Jeff Luhnow, he's going to really have a grasp on this team. He's going to be managing this team through the general manager's box. He wants to have a hands-on approach. I think AJ is going to let him do it. I think AJ has the right mindset of what to do with this team.
Hey, Andy Pondillo has been with us right here in studio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, you can check out his work and get tell the listeners one more time where to go.
ClimbingTowelsHill.com.
Very good. Much more straight ahead right here at YSR.